future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
Joe George, Andrew Carlson. You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. Here with you every Saturday from 12 to 2. You can catch our Sunday edition of the bullpen from 10 a.m. to 12 a.m. tomorrow with Brian McDonald, RJ Saunders, and Sean Mapes. They're there with you every single Sunday until Moneyline returns, and then they'll move to 12 to 2 as well. One more Texans thing here before we get into some Astros. Andrew, we got a text mostly in gibberish. I'm assuming this is like the worst voice to text.
Lance is really good at those. He loves voice to text.
Do you want me to read it like how it says?
Yeah, read how it goes, and then we can try and decipher it afterwards. Okay.
I have Wes throw in the towel in on Bryce Young altogether. Is it a foregone conclusion that Carol Anna is picking him?
Yes, it is a foregone conclusion that Carolina is picking Bryce Young, and I have thrown in the towel on him being available at 2.
100%. I wish 1185, we're just giving you a hard time. Thank you for the text. I agree. I think that it would be stunning if Bryce Young is not the first pick in the draft by the Carolina Panthers. Like, I really don't. I think you're going to have to. The only way it's not that is I think the Texans at this point might have to trade their 2024 first round pick to move up a spot.
They would have to give up 12 and probably then some to move up to 1, which you just can't do.
And you could have done it. Like, you could have with Chicago. You know, Aaron Wilson from KPRC reported that it was going to be the 12th pick in the draft to move up one spot with Chicago. And you could have done that. And I think they should have done that. But at some point is that, like, you have to move forward as a franchise. And, like, you didn't win that. You didn't lose that game. You didn't trade out for the pick when you had the chance. And, like, and now it's probably too late. Carolina moved up to that pick for a reason. They were never shopping it. That was all garbage from the get-go. Like, there was never any chance that the Carolina Panthers were going to trade the first pick after giving up DJ Moore a first and multiple seconds.
This isn't draft day. We're not doing that sort of these sort of wacky draft trades where you trade up and trade down from the same pick. Like, that's not going to happen. And Schefter said it a couple weeks ago, and I think he's 100% on the money. The Bryce Young ship has sailed for the Houston Texans. You had your opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
First in week 18, you blew it then. You had another chance to try and trade with the Bears to go up to number one. You blew it then. At this point, you've made your bed. You just got to lie in it.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge. I think they made a huge mistake, and maybe that they thought that, you know, where they were at, they thought they would be comfortable with CJ Stroud or Bryce Young, and that's why Nick Caserio balked at the idea of trading up to the number one pick at the time.
I believe that's clearly the case.
I think so too. Like, I think that they thought that they were going to go through the evaluation process, and look, the assassination of CJ Stroud's character has been in full force. Okay, the S2 test results were leaked, and frankly, I think they were leaked to make CJ look bad. You got this Brady Quinn thing, which, like, I saw you and Lamont going back and forth. Like, yeah, what Brady Quinn wasn't said that bad, but, like, David Mulugeta did send his goons, like, on Brady Quinn. Like, guys that, like, he has very close connections with. The same guys that, like, defended Justin Fields, like, relentlessly last year. But, like, it's just all out. You know, the stuff about him. You know, one of the reporters I was listening to, I can't remember, from the NFL Network, said that they were told that, I think it was Bucky Brooks, said that teams are saying that CJ Stroud thinks he knows better than the quarterback coach and the head coach.
And that would track with the comments that Nick Caserio made on KILT earlier this week, where he talked about someone that came in the building, one of their top 30 visits, that came in and had less than kind things to say about his coaches in college. Yeah. And if that was CJ Stroud, and we'd be making a lot of assumptions there that it could be.
Sure, because it really could be any of the other three quarterbacks, but.
Yeah, but, like, it would just continue to track with all these other reports that we've had sort of coming up to the surface about issues with character and ability to recognize defense and everything else. And it's just been a draft process that has been extremely unkind to CJ Stroud, to say the least.
Yeah, I really wonder, like, if he falls past, like, 7, let's say, like, what is, for any of the three quarterbacks, like, if they get past 7, What's that slide going to look like? I think it's going to be fascinating on draft night. Because, you know, it's remember, this is the NFL media, I think in large part, has been overvaluing the quarterback position when they do mock drafts. Like last year, we saw people putting Malik Willis in the first round. He went in the third. You know, people had, you know, Kenny Pickett going in the top 10. He went 20th. So, like, could we see a Will Levis, Anthony Richardson slide out of the first round?
No.
I think I think the answer could be yes.
I totally disagree with you. Because I think last year was just a complete and total anomaly.
I it could be, but like I really wonder like if these guys, like, people don't like them as much as like we're letting on. And like that, like the, because so Daniel Jeremiah and McShay, what they said on this podcast too was that like they said that they're getting their information. McShay was very upfront. He's getting his information on the quarterbacks from teams that don't need one. So like it's like in theory, it's like an Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs saying, look, if we were in that position, we would take that risk on Richardson. But they're not getting the feedback from the teams that need a quarterback that love Anthony Richardson or love Will Levis. And that's where I just wonder, like, could there be some kind of slide? And it's also just, how much are these teams lying to you? Like, how much is Washington telling you the truth about being in love with Sam Howell? How much is Tampa Bay lying to you about being cool with Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask? Like, those are the things we just don't know. Yeah. Like, I can't wait for draft day. It's going to be so fun. We're going to be live at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage on Southwest Freeway, giving away a 75-inch TV. All you got to do is show up. Or you'll enter a raffle. You're going to have, it's going to say, what will the Texans do with the second pick? You're either going to circle trade, or you're going to write a player. And then you're same thing for the 12th pick. And if you get both right, you'll be entered in a raffle to win a 75-inch television. John Granato, Jeremy Branham, Paul Gallant, Patrick Creighton will be broadcasting from 7 to 11 on the station and at Valencia's on Southwest Freeway that night. Wheelhouse will be in Kansas City for the draft, all brought to you by 1800 Tequila. Let's get into some Astros here just for a little bit, and we'll kind of carry this into the next segment. So the summer of GM Jim Crane and, or I guess it's really the winter of GM Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell.
The offseason of GM Jim Crane and
weird timeline.
Special advisor Jeff Bagwell.
So their big moves were bringing back Michael Brantley, who's obviously played no games. He's hurt, whatever. I think we all kind of expected that in a way. Jose Abreu and re-signing Rafael Montero. Those were like the three things. 20 games into the season, I think it's really hard to give any analysis on Brantley, obviously, because I think they knew this when they signed him.
I don't think they realized that he would be out this far into the beginning of the season. And everything,
that might be fair.
Everything that Bagwell said, and maybe it's hard to take assistant to the general manager, assistant to the owner, whatever the hell his title is, Jeff Bagwell at his word. But it sure seemed like he thought Brantley was going to be ready by opening day. And
yeah.
He clearly was nowhere near that.
All right, so this is my overall view on that, is that Jeff Bagwell was mostly speaking out of pocket this offseason. He was wrong about that. I think he's wrong about how much the team and the organization wants Yordan Alvarez to play in left field. I know for a fact that he got slapped on the wrist by Jim Crane by making his anti-analytics comments in front of the media. Jeff Bagwell was never supposed to be at any of these press conferences. He was supposed to be on the side. But then Berman would just go find him, and then people would flock to him. And then he just started yapping.
He just starts talking.
Baggy needs some media training would be my number one advice. But there's also a reason, I think, why you haven't heard from him since Dana Brown got hired. I think for the most part, I think he was just wrong. I think he was just speaking out of turn.
That's fair.
It's just like my honest opinion, just like knowing like some of the behind the scenes stuff of like that about like the analytics thing that happened when he dumped on Yuli, like all that stuff was just, it seemed like it was a little out of line. So yeah, it hasn't been, but so I get your point, but I also agree that they also might have thought Brantley was going to be ready. But he had some personal stuff happen during spring training.
Some unforeseen setbacks.
So, which, you know, obviously we don't know any details about, but where he left spring training two separate times, in very short stints. So, no return yet from Brantley. But we'll get into really the meat of what those guys did this offseason and how we feel about the winner of Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell and their return. We'll just get into some other Astros stuff, too, as they take on the Atlanta Braves tonight. He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George at the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Andrew Carlson. I am Joe George. You can find us on Twitter at Carlson Radio, at Joe George Radio, here with you till 2 o'clock. All right, the winter of Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell brought back Michael Brantley, re-signed Rafael Montero, brought in Jose Abreu, let Yuli Gurriel go. I thought it was a good offseason at the time. My biggest criticism at the time was that, you know, it's funny because I wasn't working with Jeremy and Joel at the time, but like I was aligned with them of like they didn't add an Aledmys Diaz replacement. Well, funny enough, they didn't need one.
Mauricio Dubon's here.
They fixed Mauricio Dubon. The fact that he has a 15 game hitting streak, he gets down in the count a lot. Like, but then he just battles out of it. Like, he is a fascinating watch. Like, to the guy that they acquired when they got rid of Nico Badrum, and then like for what Dubon was last year and what he is now, like, it's night and day.
It's been a fascinating development, and I'm going to be very interested to see if it's something that is sustainable throughout the majority of the season, because I don't expect them to hit 340 for the rest of the year. If he does, hey, Jose Altuve, you might not be playing at second base.
Sorry, Altuve, you're the DH now. But, like, you know, I was critical of, I thought maybe they would keep Christian Vasquez. But he got, you know, 3 years, $33 million. That's a pretty hefty contract for a backup. And look, they're not playing their main guys. Like, they're not playing Diaz. They're not Corey Lee's in the minors for a reason, because they wouldn't be playing.
He doesn't have to be a backup, Joe. You could just jettison Martin Maldonado and actually play Christian Vasquez. It could have been an option.
I've been there.
Maybe in my fantasy lands.
I wish, man. But they just, the Astros and Dusty Baker specifically, just firmly believe that Martin Maldonado's value is so high that it's irreplaceable. And I sort of get it, but I felt like, you know, knowing that, you know, you're going to lose, like you're going to have nothingness at the bottom of your order, when you could have had a prospect or two like battling for that spot, would have been nice. I really do think that Diaz will eventually be the everyday catcher by the end of the season.
Look, from your lips to Dusty's ears, but...
Well, I think they made a mistake last year. I would have traded Jose Urquidy for Wilson Contreras.
You and I both.
No, he got hurt 5 days after the deadline, so it worked out, but...
I'm just so over the worshiping of how great Martin Maldonado is behind the plate.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
I can't fathom a world where it truly means as much as Dusty Baker seems to think it means.
And let me ask, and I would ask Dusty this question too, is, you know, does playing Yonier Diaz one out of every six games, does that really set up your franchise for success? Knowing that Martin Maldonado, there's like a 95% chance he won't be your catcher next year.
Does Dusty care about next year, though? That would be my question
Dana Brown was on with Heyman, I think, and it was a New York-based podcast, and Dana Brown was on, and he said that they have not talked extension yet, but it has been, he did not deny it for Dusty Baker, that they would not talk about it. Now, I personally don't think Dusty Baker will be back next year. I know I'm on the record that AJ Hinch will be back. I think he will be. Like, he's going to be a free agent. He's not going to want to stay in Detroit. Dusty, you could retire, and Joe Espada is kind of getting that, like, very differently, because he doesn't have any checkered past, to my knowledge. He's kind of getting that Eric Bieniemy treatment, you know, where, like, Bieniemy, partially because he's coaching so deep into the season, he can't really be part of the coaching cycle. And Joe Espada is kind of dealing with that too. Like, the fact that he wasn't the Royals coach this offseason, like, blew my mind. Like, how do teams not want to have a guy like Joe Espada? But they just don't. And so I think, yeah, you're right. It's a good point. Like, does Dusty care about next year? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. My guess initially would be no.
Probably fair.
But again, we don't know that for certain. So we can't say.
Well, he said if he wins one, he wants to win two. And if he wins two, he's going to want to win three.
Oh, look, as long as the Astros keep winning World Series, Dusty can stay as long as he wants, and we can all bitch and moan about whatever the hell he's doing, because clearly it's working.
Look, if the idea is that at Minute Maid Park and at the end of October or November when the World Series ends, it's Dusty Baker saying, let's party, and why not try to win three? cool with me. Like, forget AJ Hinch, forget Joe Espada. I'll take being on the field again when the Astros win the World Series and everyone's singing We Are the Champions at the top of their lung. Like,
top five moment in my life being in the stands for that.
That was
incredible.
I think I would want to go as a fan next time. It was really cool to be there as a media member, just being on the field and then going in the clubhouse after. Just I never thought I would experience something like that, like in my career. Like talking to Lance after the game, just like you walk into the clubhouse and the World Series trophy is just sitting there. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, it's so hard. It was so hard not to like break and like not be like just like enthralled in the moment. Cause like you just don't, I don't know. Like, you never think like you're actually going to get to do something like that. And it's the only sport you can really do that.
Right.
Like, if the Texans ever won a Super Bowl, like, we could all go cover the Super Bowl, but like,
we're not going to be next to the Lombardi trophy.
Yeah. You're not in the locker room.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, or you are eventually, but not like during like when the, like the party is happening. But how do you feel about the rest of his offseason? Montero's been shaky.
I was very against the Montero extension when it happens, and even more so after his start to the season. He can put stuff together, but I think Rafael Montero, what we saw from him last year, was far and away the best version you are ever going to get of him. And to give him a 3-year contract at the money you gave to him, at like the level and at the money you did, just speaks volumes of the lack of experience you had with whoever was dealing with that contract at the time in Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell. He's going to end up being okay. I don't think he's going to like be the reliever and be the pitcher that he was last year. But at the same breath, I also don't think that he's going to be as bad as he's been to start the season. Like, his whip is nearly 2. He has been really, really, really bad to start the season from a getting runners on base perspective. Now, he's gotten out of a couple jams. He had Brian Abreu come save his ass a couple nights ago.
Yeah, Brian Abreu, that was a incredible, this guy is your closer.
It was a ridiculous Houdini act, and he's, in my opinion, the best pitcher on the team right now.
No, he is, because what was so special about that outing for him was that, like, Montero gets into a jam. Abreu's not warming up. So, like, he gets ready. He already so quick. And then he put out the fire perfectly. Like, we were talking about this on the Killer Bees this week. Like, what should Brian Abreu's role be? And, like, you know, I think Joel was kind of saying, like, he should be the eighth inning guy. And I think in a perfect scenario, like in a no-hitter, he's your eighth inning guy. But Brian Abreu, like, he's the fireman of this team. Like, he can pitch in the fourth, fifth, sixth through eighth. Like, you know, it's just like you gotta, like, you just put him in when you need him.
And that's so valuable for a team to have a pitcher who is flexible enough to basically go into any situation. If you can say, hey, this is a 3-2 ball game, we're in the seventh, and we need you to get through the heart of the order right here. Throw Brian Abreu in there, gets through it, no problem. Hey, we've got runners on first and second, no outs, sixth inning, fifth inning, we got to pull the starter. Hey, Brian Abreu, you're going in there, you get out of the inning.
100%.
Damage limited. And in the playoffs is when that sort of pitcher becomes so much more valuable. So to have that sort of luxury of someone who's getting that experience doing that in the regular season, I think is only going to pay dividends once you get to the
postseason. Rafael Montero, like, the biggest issue, like, I think they overpaid him a little bit, but, you know, they set the market. And then people, you know, they followed suit pretty quick. Like, you saw some bad contracts, like Taylor Rogers, like, got $10 million. You know, Dave Robertson's 37 years old. He got, like, $10 or $11 million. So, like, Montero, for, like, what they set the market and people followed, like, there wasn't a huge course correction. So I think it is an overpay, but also the big difference with Montero versus like any other player who got the same contract, they just don't pitch on the quality of bullpen that the Astros, that Montero pitches in.
That's my big issue with the contract, is the fact that, did you overpay? Yes, you did. But did you pay it of, like, it's one thing if you overpay at a position of need where it was something that you can say, hey, the Astros really needed to make a move here. Did you really need to make a move to overpay your setup guy? I don't think so. Knowing what you had in Brian Abreu, did you really need to make a move to overpay Rafael Montero? I don't think so. I just think that, like, that's my big issue with it, is this money could have been spent better elsewhere on the team. And for instance, like I talked at the start of the segment, maybe instead of paying Rafael Montero, you keep the bullpen as it is with the rest of its pieces. You bring back Christian Vasquez at 3 years, $33 million, something like that. And I think that is makes infinitely more sense for this Astros team than bringing Rafael Montero back at the money you did.
Yeah, like I think they're $18 million under the luxury tax right now. So like they're not, you know, they're not tight for money of before, you know, Jim Crane's going to get taxed. But this, look, the Astros, I think they made the right decision because they weren't on the same page with James Click. They made the right decision to move on. But when Jim Crane told the media and told all the fans that they were going to hire a GM by the end of January, and then they definitely did not do that, or the start of January, and none of that happened, you know, you knew things were gonna, questionable things were going to happen. Thankfully, I don't think they did. I don't think they made any mistakes big enough to where like it ever is going to cost you long term.
That's the situation they're in, though. It would have to be a massive mistake to derail all the work that has gone into getting to the Astros to where they are at this point. Like their roster is so well constructed and their organization in general has been so well run over the past 5 or 6 years. It's just going to take a consistent stream of relatively major mistakes to derail them from the path that they're currently
on. Yeah, and just quickly on Jose Abreu, you know, we talked a lot about last week, you know, about how the hard hit stuff wasn't there. The chasing's been pretty high, but he's looked better. And like,
it's been good, but not good enough is how it's called it.
Yeah, I agree. But thankfully, this team's so good that they can, you know, hopefully it's just a slow start and they can, he can withstand that. Because I wouldn't call it a bad signing because I think based on everything, like it was a good signing. You're just hoping that old age didn't wake up and kick him in the ass and pin him 1, 2, 3.
The type of contact he's made over the past couple of weeks, or past week really, since we talked about his early season struggles last Saturday, it's been better. The way it sounds off of his bat and where the outs are coming, it's looked significantly better. The only issue for me really over the past week has been the chase.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like he's been chasing after some stuff that he should not be chasing, but the type of contact that he's been making has me much more optimistic about the trajectory for the rest of his season than I was a week ago.
He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You can find us on Twitter at Carlson Radio, at Joe George Radio. Coming up next, we got a special guest coming in, our guy, Ruben Nijhe, is the starting right tackle for the Houston Cougars. He's going to join us, give his perspective on the Texans draft, some of the pass rushers that he's seen from high school to college, and what the Texans could be doing at the number two pick if they don't take a quarterback. That's next here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock every single Saturday, just 5 days away from the NFL draft. And today we brought up our guy, Ruben Nijhe, right tackle.
Yes, sir.
University of Houston Cougars.
Go Cougs.
Hey, blessed to be back again, you know.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Making history every time.
So we're going to get into some draft stuff here because obviously we've been talking a lot about it. The number two pick, Texans not taking a quarterback most likely. It looks like it's going to be Will Anderson. Obviously.
You don't like that one, Andrew?
No, you need a quarterback in the first round.
For sure.
You need a quarterback in the first round.
I feel that. Second pick.
How would you feel like as, you know, like a fan of the NFL, obviously playing in college football, like, you know the value of the quarterback position.
Yeah.
So, like, they don't take a quarterback, they're going to roll with the same dudes they've been rolling with before.
Yeah.
Like, I know you can't besmirch the name of Case Keenum. Yeah. Probably one of the best Cougs of all time.
Go Cougs.
But, like, if they don't take a quarterback, like, what's that like in the locker room when you don't have a quarterback on your roster?
I mean, I feel like in the NFL, it's probably a little bit different than college. And maybe more, like, they may look at it as, like, all right, we're going to rebuild. Probably they might, you know, take somebody with that pick, like you said, you mentioned Will Anderson. I think they could trade it, you know, get probably more picks to potentially get the quarterback that they do want. Maybe in the next draft, who knows, they may have their eyes on somebody. But the team probably just feels like, you know, if they don't get a quarterback, that the ownership, you know, they're probably not that serious about winning now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's definitely like, I think we all kind of feel the same way, Andrew. Yeah. It's like, it's just like, it's tough that like the fans want a quarterback because this is a franchise has never had a quarterback, and like, and you're very
the one time you did, he wanted out.
Yeah, it's tough. So like, if you look at, if it's not a quarterback, Andrew, are you solely Will Anderson then? At two, at least.
If you're telling,
I know you
me,
want them to go back in.
Look, if you're telling me that I can't have a quarterback and that's no longer an option at number two, then I would have to say Will Anderson, based on the production that he had in college. Tyree Wilson, there's been some whispers and talk about him, but Will Anderson was a Heisman Trophy like invitee as a defensive lineman.
Yeah,
like that, that doesn't happen all that often in college. Like, he produced at an exceptional level in the SEC for two straight seasons at Alabama. Like, yes, his sack numbers and stuff were down last year compared to the year before, but he still led the SEC in sacks. Like, he was a fantastically productive player at Alabama. And to trade that away for a guy who's got some good physical traits in Tyree Wilson, like, I just could not understand the logic or reasoning behind doing that after you did damn near the exact same thing picking Derek Stingley over Sauce Gardner last season.
Yeah, it's production versus traits. Like, yeah. That's the conversation with it. But, like, so, like, Ruben, from, like, your perspective, like, as an offensive lineman, and you look at a guy, like, I know you've seen Will Anderson play and some of these guys, like, and, you know, Tyree Wilson, like, you know, you're going to be in the Big 12 next year now, so, like, you're going to play guys more like him.
I actually faced him last year.
Oh, did you? You guys did play Tech last year. Tell me about Tyree Wilson and what you think of, like, Will Anderson.
Yeah, nah, Tyree Wilson is, like, a big guy. He's, like, my height.
6'5"?
Yeah, 270. So, like, you know, he's a big guy, but as an O-lineman, I'm not really worried about his, like, athletic ability in terms of, like, speed and get-off. Mm-hmm. I just know he has length and strength. Will Anderson, when you watch him, you know, he's a – kind of like he's not your traditional DN. You know, he can do a lot of things where he's in coverage, where he may be in, like, a linebacker position type deal. So, like, he shows his value there. But I feel like you guys are missing Jalen Carter.
Yeah,
so I feel like I would take him with the second pick if I'm not taking a quarterback, because
Jalen Carter's tough, though.
I think he's a guaranteed, as long as he stays on the field, a Hall of Fame player, like, more than anybody else in his draft class.
Here's the thing. I agree with you, but, like, it's hard. You can't ignore, like, what happened off the field, you know. So, like, in between Georgia's last game of the season and the college football playoff, like, he gained a lot of weight, and you could see it in the playoffs where, like, he's on the sidelines, you know, every two or three plays.
Got the oxygen mask.
Yeah, the oxygen mask. You know, and then look, you know, the stuff happened where he's at the scene of a crime where two of his friends, you know, sadly passed away when they were street racing, and then the combine, like, his pro day, he shows up overweight as well and can't finish his drills. So, like, I 100% agree, like, Jalen Carter will, and it'll likely end up playing, like, I think there's a good chance it plays out like Laremy Tunsil. Like, Laremy Tunsil is, like, one of the best left tackles in the NFL. He's been one, but because the gas mask video came out on draft day, like, he fell in the draft. Like, Carter, you know, if Jalen Carter goes to, like, the Seattle Seahawks at 5, or even, like, the Bears at 9, or if he falls past that, and he's in the right situation, yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, he's the best player.
And I feel as you're saying, the off-the-field stuff can kind of deter you from, like, how good he is as a player. But I feel like at the end of the day, it's the NFL. It's like, what can you do for me on the field? Like,
yeah.
And I know if I was a GM, I would look at him, and I'm like, all right, I would entrust that, you know, I would have good mentors around him, probably put some, you know, clauses in his contract where, like,
sure,
you have to maintain – this certain weight, which they already do have that in contracts, but, like, things like that.
But you can go past, like, the norm.
Exactly. Yeah. Just to make sure that, like, he's going to be available for us to use.
Yeah.
You know?
So I don't think he's on the board for the Texans at 2, but, like, that Andrew, sucks. Like, if they took Stroud at 2, but Carter was there at 12.
It's hard. It would be hard to pass on that level of talent that he has at 12. Like, Ruben mentioned it. If you're talking about just pure on-field talent, Jalen Carter is probably the most talented football player 100%. In this draft. Like, 100%. I don't think that there's really a whole lot of debate about that. It's just a matter of, are you going to have the structure in the organization to let him be the pro that we know that he can really be?
And maybe patience.
Yeah, and I think that you could trust DeMeco with that. Like, what it would come down to for me is if he's there at 12 and DeMeco says, hey, you know what? If you take him, I will make sure that I bring him under my wing, and we are going to build this organization in the right way so that we give him every opportunity to become the player that we know he can be. If DeMeco is on board with taking him at 12, because he's the guy that all offseason has talked about character, and basically every time he's been asked about what type of players he wants to bring into the organization, DeMeco Ryans has talked about the character of the player. If he believes that he can be the guy that leads Jalen Carter, then that's the situation. Yeah. I'll be like, hey, take him at 12.
I got another name for you here, Ruben. A guy that I believe you said you know him. You played against him in high school, or Nolan Smith.
Oh, yeah, he was my teammate.
Yeah. So he's a little lighter. You know, he's 239.
Yeah.
But he ran, under a 4.5 40.
Yeah. Fast as hell.
So, like, he's crazy, super athletic, but like he's, you know, 239, like you can do a bunch of them. Like you can kind of put him inside, outside, off the ball. Like you can do, you can go out wide. Like there's a million things you can do with him. So like from like where you view a guy like that size, do you think someone like that size is going to translate well to the NFL still?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm
like, that speed is crazy.
He kind of fits in that Will Anderson category for me where like you can do a lot of different things with him, like you mentioned. So like you have the athletic ability, you got the mentality, you know, all you need is the right structure, the right defense to, you know, for him to go in and it fits him. And I feel like he's definitely going to work out. He's going to shine. Like all, what's going to shine is like all his like, you know, natural potential, like talent, all the things he got.
For sure.
But he's definitely a dog. Definitely a dog.
Who's your, like, who's some of your favorite players in this draft? You got anyone?
Favorite players in this draft?
That are not Cougs?
I mean, that are not Cougs. I'm an O-line guy.
Okay.
I like Darnell Wright. Okay. Right tackle for Tennessee. You know, I like to put, you know.
I've seen a lot of people putting him as, like, as potentially the number two tackle in the draft.
I think he's a number one tackle.
Above Skoronski. Yeah, and, for sure. Yeah, I think Skoronski's more of a guard.
Yeah.
Like, he's got little arms. Like, so, like, can you explain that to me? So, like, Peter Skoronski plays right tackle, left tackle for Northwestern the whole time, right? But now it's like, as soon as he can go to the NFL, his arms, he's got little arms. So
I mean,
like, how big do your arms have to be to play tackle versus guard?
That's just like, all right, this is what I honestly feel like it as an athlete. It's just a bunch of people who are talking about the arm left are a bunch of people who probably never played the position. Sure. So they don't really know. They're just going off of like, oh, the average, you know, tackle arm left in the
has
league.
X,
exactly. Yeah. And he's below that. He has the arm left of a guard.
So sure.
They don't, they're just going off of like, you know, generalities and all that. But when it comes down to the plays about what, how you use what you got, you know.
So if you have, if you're a guy like Peter Skoronski, like, and you had shorter arms.
Yeah.
How does that change like the way you play the tackle?
I mean, you just can't be as aggressive.
Okay.
Because, you know, like, if you're going to be an aggressive puncher as a offensive lineman, you know, with short arms, you're probably going to end up leaning more because you're trying to compensate for your, you know, the length of your arms.
Sure.
You're trying to cover the ground, probably end up breaking your back. Whereas if you have longer arms, you can sit back and just play with the DN, D line or whatever. But he does a really good job. He's patient with his hands. He's good with his feet. His feet make up for it. He's a really good player.
Anyone else you like a lot? Like Paris Johnson?
Yeah, he's cool. He's all right. I mean, I'm the greatest guy.
That kind of sounds like if you rooted for a team that drafted Paris Johnson, you wouldn't be happy on draft day.
No. I don't really care for that. It's just, you know, my inner competitiveness.
Yeah.
You
know, I feel you.
Soon it's going to be about me. So.
Well, when's you guys got your spring game coming up soon, right?
No, we don't. We canceled it.
Oh, okay.
Been to have enough O-linemen. Everybody's transferring out.
So gotcha. Kinda, okay. How you feeling about the Big 12 move?
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited. You know, UT, got some UT people here. You know, I gotta destroy them, come back here, talk my stuff. You know what I'm saying?
I'd imagine you're going to walk out like, Monday. And
I like coming in to like, oh, new territory, you know, expectations. Nobody knows. They're like, oh, are they going to be good? Are they going to be bad? I can't wait to just show everybody.
Nice. So let's plug some of the stuff you got going on. So we got you coming up here weekly doing a podcast.
I gotta tune in. Ural Speaks on YouTube.
So what is it again?
Ural Speaks.
Yeah. Okay, and you guys are dropping your second episode today?
Yeah, of the Rue Pill.
And who you got with you this week? Which are your teammates you have come up with you?
I had my boy Trevante, he's an insurance reporter right now, and Jacob Garza, our long snapper.
Oh, yeah. The long snapper.
He's cool, John Weeks action.
So now let's go behind the scenes here, Andrew. So the long snapper comes up. One of the guys didn't make it on camera. Do you think it was the long snapper that didn't make it on camera?
Oh, absolutely not. I think the long snapper wants to be on camera. How many times did the long snapper get the opportunity to be on camera?
Was the long snapper on camera or was he the one off camera, Ruben?
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. Joke's on you, Andrew. He was definitely off the
camera. I thought he was gonna take advantage of his chance to shine.
We wouldn't even let that happen.
Damn.
That's a tough life.
They already have the easiest practice. Like, you don't understand, the specialists in practice, they don't do nothing. Like,
so what you're telling me, kickers aren't people?
Nah, they're people, but like they just have to wait their turn. You know what I'm saying? They can't get any special privileges than they already have.
They got
to
wait a lot.
Okay. I have a question for y'all, though. What do y'all feel about the Texans trading that pick? Are y'all
12 or 2?
That? too. I talked about that in my podcast, and I was like, I feel like they could. And
if you're not going to take a quarterback, I would like to trade back to
Seattle. That's how I feel. That's how I feel.
Yeah. If you're not taking a quarterback, trade back.
100%.
Trade back.
I think it's been out there that the Raiders only like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud.
Okay.
So, like, if they want CJ Stroud that bad, then, like, I would trade back to 7.
100%.
And, like, especially if you can get a first, because, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't buy into Josh McDaniels. Mm. And like, I think when you trade with someone, like there's like a risk, like you want that team to fail.
Yeah.
Like you want them to have a top five pick. I think trading with the Raiders, like Jimmy Garoppolo, like you clearly don't believe in CJ Stroud. So then like, yeah, you trade him CJ Stroud. Like Josh Jacobs won't sign his franchise tag. He's not happy.
Damn.
Like Devontae Adams probably ain't happy with the fact that like he went there to play with Derek Carr. So like I would trade that pick. If they don't like Stroud, I think it's a mistake. Because like I like Tyree Wilson, but like, do I like him at 2? No, probably not.
Exactly.
Do I like him at 7? Yeah.
7?
Yeah, like if you trade back to 7, like take him there, like wow. I think that makes more sense. Well,
like who else is Tyree Wilson better than to take him at 7? Like,
of the other pass rushers, would you put him in front of Miles Murphy?
I mean,
because
like, I wouldn't put him in front of Miles Murphy based off like what they actually do.
But, so like you would put Nolan Smith and Miles Murphy ahead of Tyree?
100%.
That's fine. Like if you take any of those guys.
Two guys above Tyree Wilson, and just on if you go off the game, right? Derek Parrish, right? Uh-huh. Our DN had 4.5 sacks against Texas Tech. 4.5 sacks against Texas Tech. You know how many Tyree Wilson had?
0.
I think he had like a half sack.
A half sack? Mm-hmm. Well, because he was going against you.
No, but not even that. Look at it. Like if some dude had 4.5 sacks, like,
yeah,
and he only played 3 games, he had the most sacks in the nation in like the first like 3 games of the season with like 6.
Yeah.
Then he ruptured his bicep. That like, there's so many sleepers in this draft. I feel like, yeah, like it's easy to see the top names that you always see being cycled. So like, you can believe a Tyree Wilson at 2 or a 7. But if you really like deep dive into this draft,
you like some of the other guys that like are being like a little more undervalued.
What?
All right, he is Ruben Inije. You can find him on Twitter at
RUNIJE.
And that's your Instagram as well, I'm guessing?
My Instagram is reu.reu.
Yeah, man, you got to get those things the same. you can find him there. He's Andrew Carlson. We got one more segment left to go. The Rockets coaching search is well underway. We got second interviews, and the name that everybody likes might not be an option for the Rockets after all. We hit on that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Circa Sportsbook.
Best sportsbook in the world.
You might change your mind. Will Levis, a -140 betting favorite.
Oh.
To be the second pick in the 2023 NFL draft.
It's a very recent development, Joe.
Just today.
Look, Jeremy Branham is throwing a celebration party somewhere.
Going off what we were talking about just there with Ruben, though, I do. It doesn't say he's the betting favorite to be a Houston Texan.
Just the second overall pick.
So, like, part of me is like, do they really? Yeah, I think the answer is yes. Will Levis opened at +450 yesterday, Circa Sports, to be the number 2 pick. Today's a -140. So the momentum is swinging for Will Levis.
Lovely.
To be the pick at 2 for the Houston Texans.
Circa still holds a great place in my heart, though, even despite that terrible news.
It just is upsetting you a little bit.
Just a tiny
bit.
We
might have to call him and say, hey, guys, can you take this off the board? It's just upsetting us. Like, that's tough.
I don't want to agree with this line.
Yeah, I don't think it's hard not to watch the highlights of Will Levis and not get excited. He's super athletic. He's got a cannon. He can make a lot of really good throws, but he makes a lot of bad throws. The injury stuff is a concern. You know, like he's gonna need to work with like the Astros on learning how to slide.
If you think you can mold Will Levis, I am okay with the pick. Am I a fan of it in terms of what my own eyes tell me? Not really.
Agreed.
But if you and your staff believe that you can develop the clay that is Will Levis and mold it into a really good quarterback, then by all means, go ahead and take him. And I can't complain too much because, hey, it's our quarterback of the future.
All right, let's get into this Rocket stuff here just a little bit. So Ime Udoka and Frank Vogel are going to be part of the second interviews for the Rockets job. Nick Nurse fired by the Toronto Raptors. He will now be included in the second round of interviews. So really, he'll be on his first, but he's going to be heavily involved in the process. I know Sam Cassell interviewed this week. I've not seen anything official about a second interview for him. But if the candidates are Vogel, Udoka, and Nick Nurse, I feel pretty good, I'll be honest.
It feels a lot like the Texans coaching search from this past offseason, does it not? Where you had a couple of really awful seasons. For the Rockets, it's now three awful seasons. And you know what? It looked like the franchise was totally incompetent for a little while. And all of a sudden, once they decided to kick it into gear with the coaching search and start interviewing some legit candidates and names, that's when the rebuild really starts to get going.
Yeah.
I feel like that's sort of where the Rockets are.
No, I think so too. And Ime Udoka is, you know, I got an email this morning from, I think it was one of the offshore sites, that Udoka is the betting favorite to be the next head coach of the Raptors.
And that would make sense.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, I think people would be disappointed. But just because someone is available doesn't mean that there are a real candidate. You know, it's kind of like Ben Johnson with the Texans. Like, everyone wanted Ben Johnson. I wanted Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Lions, to be the next head coach of the Texans. He withdrew before anything. If Udoka knows he's going to be the next head coach of the Raptors,
he's going to take that over this Rocket job. Like, that's just the current position of the two franchises. But I would legitimately be happy with any of those three options, just because it would be such a great deviation from what we've seen over the last few seasons.
Frank Vogel's at the bottom of the three.
For me. I agree.
But, you know, he's done some good things in the NBA to where, like, I don't think that they are going backwards with that hire.
And I think people also forget that Frank Vogel was the coach of those Indiana teams that pushed the LeBron-led Miami Heat, the big three, the Heatles, for, you know, 6-7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. Those were very good and very well-coached teams.
If Paul George doesn't break his leg, like, there's a lot of things that could go differently for that Pacers. Because, like, once he did that, his Pacers career was kind of over at that point. So, like, I think Frank Vogel does make a lot of sense, you know, for the Rockets, where they are as an organization. The thing I like it the most, even though the meddling from Rafael Stone was over 2 years ago at this point, and, you know, even he listened to Silas when Silas said, don't get involved like that. You don't have any of those concerns with any of these three candidates. So I think the one that would get the people the most excited would be Udoka, and then Nick Nurse, and then, I think it's going to be Nick Nurse.
I do as well, and it would hard not to be excited about what Nick Nurse would bring to the table with his track record of youth development and the way that he has sort of fostered the careers of Pascal Siakam, OJ Anunoby, Fred VanVleet. Especially a guy like Fred VanVleet, there were not very high expectations of him coming in from Wichita State to the NBA. And the player that he's turned into, the player that Siakam's turned into, it would be very, very difficult not to be excited as a Rockets fan to see that and say, hey, you know what? I think that this guy could be very good for our youth players.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously the big difference is that the Texans, it was their fault they didn't get the first pick in the draft. The Rockets, we are 26 days away, something like that. I think May 16th is the lottery. That's obviously like the big moment in time for the Rockets this offseason is you know, what is happening, you know, at, you know, with the lottery and like how it goes. It changes everything. So he's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You can find us on Twitter at Carlson Radio, at Joe George Radio. We'll be back next Saturday from 12 to 2. Full reaction to the NFL draft. The draft will be happening as we are on the air, rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7. So we have all that coverage for you here next weekend as well. You guys can find me on the Killer Bees Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. Andrew with the Wheelhouse from 3 to 7. We will talk to you guys later. Check out the bullpen tomorrow at 10 o'clock with Brian, RJ, and Sean. See you later.